Hello and welcome to Ask the Vet. My name is Beth Broom and I am here today hosting and our guest speaker is Dr. Reese Davis. Hi, Reese.
Hey, how's it going?
So this is a call-in show. Just to remind you, if you have any questions for us, the topic today is behavior, specifically canine behavior is what we're going to focus on. Any questions, a phone call, please give us a call. The number here is 963-2976. Okay, Dr. Davis, I, sitting in vet appointments, I hear a lot of conversation from clients about dominance in their dog. Either they think their dog is dominant or submissive. And I feel like we need to maybe have some clarification on what the term dominance means and how does it really apply to dogs? Are they really dominant?
That's a great question, and we do get that quite a bit. So dominance, it's a term that I do not like to use in dogs. It's not a trait, a personality trait that we can give to them. Oftentimes I think that it's mistaken. It's a, misinterpretation on our side, on owner sides, because the dog is either confused, anxious, a lot of times it stems from anxiety. And what they don't know, what they don't understand, it can cause them to act out in aggressive manners. So I don't think it's actually, you know, pets trying to force their dominant nature upon other people. It's a form of expression when they're trying to create distance between something that they don't understand.
Right. And so, I mean, would you agree that owners, I think, tend to think of it when they see signs of aggression, they think that the dog is just trying to control them and control the situation and be number one in the household?
Yeah, definitely. I tend to see that kind of happen.
I mean, it's just a misconception we're trying to clear up today that it's not really a behavior where the animal's trying to be in charge of the household, but more of a behavior stemming from something deeper like an anxiety or something like that, and that's how they respond. Would you agree with
right.
that?
Right. It typically responds from something that they anxiety because they don't understand something. Where the communication from their owner is unclear. They're hearing mixed signals from different owners in the home. Sometimes it can be visitors, pets in the home, just different experiences in their life. When it's not a consistent experience, it's confusing to them. Right. And then just that kind of negative interaction, the aggressive interaction, is just misconstrued as dominance. But communicating well with your pet, understanding to see those signals when he's starting to show that he's uncomfortable, you know, he's not as sure in his stance, he's pacing, he's licking his lips, something like that, are triggers that we can look for when he's unsure about things that can stem to these thoughts of dominant actions.
Yeah, because I think that pets tend to communicate. Obviously, they can't speak to us with words, so they communicate by body language. And I feel like there are so many subtle signals that animals give us that most of us, without some type of training or information, aren't aware of. But when you become aware of those things, you can really pick up a lot more on what your dog's telling you before they become, quote unquote, aggressive.
Exactly. I mean, we see it with human body language quite a bit. You know, we're crossing our arms. We're not making eye contact. We're not interested. And we pick up on that. You know, I like to say that we pick up on that with people.
It sometimes is lacking as well.
Yeah. But it can be difficult to notice that in dogs if that's not something that you're trained to see. And then just imagine if your dog is uncomfortable and you're pushing him and you're not noticing that, of course they're going to react in a negative manner or lash out in a manner because they're telling you, hey, this isn't something I'm used to. This isn't something I'm comfortable with. And then if we continue to put them in that uncomfortable situation, they do tend to act out in not always the nicest manner.
Right. I just want to remind you that this is Ask the Vet, and this is a call-in show. So if you have any questions about anything, but specifically behavior today, call 963-2976. And we were talking a little bit about anxiety. Do you feel like we see a lot of pets these days with anxiety? And is that something that is it the owner's fault that all these animals are having anxiety? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I tend to see it quite a bit in the hospital. Yeah. But I do hear stories that it's occurring outside, whether it's, anxious situations at the dog park, anxious and encounters just on a walk with new dogs, new people, dogs that are barking when the doors, somebody knocks at the door, they hear something outside. We hear a lot of situations that can just trigger the dog to act out like that. And I don't think that it's ever owner's fault. It's again, we need to watch our pets and keep track of them to find out what these triggers are. I do think that there's a genetic predisposition for pets to have, just like us, kind of an anxious personality. So it's hard to say what will cause them to be anxious, but I definitely don't think it's the owner's fault. It's just if sometimes when it goes overlooked, it can progress to worsening symptoms.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say that if you're having any type of problem with your pet, to not ignore that problem so that it does get worse. And even if it seems like something silly, but it is a concern to you, I think the first place to address it is with your veterinarian. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I mean, mild symptoms, the sooner we see them, the much easier it is to treat them, to get their anxiety under control. Sometimes it's nice to get some medical intervention on board and having us, we see pets, that's what we do. It's our profession. We can give you at least a professional opinion on what we recommend. But sometimes pets will definitely need medical intervention because they can be so much anxiety that they don't listen to you. So a lot of times when you think, he's being defiant, not wanting to come, it's not that he's trying to defy you. I don't think that benefits him in any or her in any way. He's being defiant because he doesn't understand. Either the cues aren't consistent for him, or his brain is just so clouded with anxiety, it can be hard to focus. I mean, it's I guess it would be similar to trying, to cram for a final. You're anxious, you're trying to study as much as you can the night before a test, but you're not taking in information because your brain is so clouded with, anxiety. So I think pets have similar situations. They'll be anxious, whether it's at the dog park, they're home alone, so they act out in very anxious manners, and they can need medications to help open up, those neural pathways to learn that it's not such a scary situation.
Right, because I feel like the medication is a tool to help aid in their learning and their progress at home that owners can do with them, and it just brings them to a level where they're not so heightened with anxiety.
Yeah, correct.
And they can focus. Mm-hmm. Focus a little bit better.
We don't always need them on, medications. It's sometimes we just try a trial just so we can add, a behavior modification plan to help them learn. Help them be more receptive to training.
Yeah.
To help them learn, there's other ways to go about this without having such anxiety associated with it.
Yeah. And just to remind you, this is a call-in show, so please feel free to give us a call if you have any questions for the vet today. I have Dr. Reese Davis here, and the phone number is 963-2976. In regards to a lot of behavior problems, let's talk about prevention. I mean, I think prevention is key. We see puppies all the time and young dogs that are newly adopted that don't appear to have any real hang-ups. I mean, we could cover the dogs with hang-ups all day long, lots of things to talk about, but prevention is key for those that don't have any problems yet. What's your take on prevention? What can people do to help their pets?
That's a really good point. Prevention is my favorite kind of medicine. If you are lucky to have a dog when he or she's a puppy, socialization is key. The first couple weeks of their 12 weeks, 16 weeks, up to 3 to 6 months is a very impressionable time in their life. It's key that they're experiencing all new environments, as long as they're kind of safe. I definitely am stressing the importance of vaccines and that kind of safety. But I think a lot of times there's subtle changes at 3 months of age that we don't notice. And that we don't start to see the anxiety until later. I would say at the signs, at the age of, you know, sexual maturity around a year of age, social maturity around 2 to 3 years of age is really when we start to see the symptoms, but that doesn't mean that it's not occurring at 3 months of age. And good examples are, even when we have puppies coming into the hospital at 3 months of age, they're getting very adverse to having their ears touch, having their paws manipulated, or their mouth open. Those kind of negative experiences, if they're not reinforced at home, they can become very aggressive at the hospital. And that's just an example of kind of our line of work. But it definitely occurs, you know, on a social level as well. When you're trying to socialize them at dog parks, you know, it's really important to expose them to all different kinds of, you know, animals and loud noises and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what do you think? I mean, there's that fine line for these new puppies we see. And by the way, I'm here to promote adopting senior dogs with behavior problems or without behavior problems. Either way, I think there's a lot we can do for every dog, no matter what kind of problem they have. So if I'm going to say anything, it's adopt the senior dog. But anyway, puppies are adorable. So we get puppies in and we worry about vaccination and exposure to problems. But yet they haven't had all their vaccines, but at the same time, that's one of the most important times that they should be getting appropriate socialization with other dogs. How do you recommend people go about that in a safe way?
So I recommend a typical vaccine protocol where you're getting your vaccine boosters every 3 to 5 weeks. As long as your puppy's receiving vaccines every 3 to 5 weeks and staying away from high risk areas. So dog parks, no dog parks until completely vaccinated. Okay. High traffic dog areas. So if there's trails that, you know, dogs are on all the time, that's probably going to be another high risk area. You know, your friend's house that has a vaccinated dog at home, the coffee shop down the street. I think those are some probably good spots where you'll have a lot of interaction with kids, different sizes of adults, adults with hats, adults with coats,
yep.
Different smells, different sounds, that kind of stuff is very important. Puppy classes are great, you know, trying to get them socialized with puppies in their same kind of vaccine protocol stage, so the other puppies are getting vaccinated as well. You know, I think even visits to the vet hospital is great. Visits where they're just getting weighed or they're getting treats, they're not going to get their temperature taken, they're not getting vaccines or something that they're going to keep associating the place with such a negative experience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, definitely strengthening appointments. If they're getting their vaccines every 3 to 5 weeks and you're avoiding high stress dog high traffic dog areas, then the risk to me is minimal compared to the risk of having an unsocialized dog.
Right. Because it's from my understanding, between the age of 1 and 3, that most dogs end up in the shelter because of poor behavior or some type of behavior problem. And then we all know that high volume of euthanasia and overcrowding of shelters. So it sounds like there are plenty of ways for people to get their dogs the socialization they need, but also taking into consideration their mm-hmm. health and everything.
Yeah. So the preventive aspect of it is great. I'd love to keep pets out of, you know, returning to shelters or going to shelters in general. But I definitely want to stress that even though your pet goes to the shelter and has a behavioral problem, we can definitely work with them. I mean, there's so many options to get them healthier, to feel more safe, to feel to help relieve them of their anxiety and the unknown that they're afraid of.
And just to remind you guys, this is Ask the Vet. This is a call-in show. We haven't had any callers yet, so please feel free. Pick up the phone. Ask us a question. And the number to call is 963-2976. Look at that. We have a caller.
She's persuasive.
Okay. Hello. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Beth.
Hey.
This is Garrett.
Hi, hello, Garrett. How are you today?
Good.
Good.
So you brought up the the anxiety of when people knock on the door and loud noises like that.
Yeah.
Jack's pretty well trained, but
right.
One of the issues I've had is when people come to the door,
mm-hmm.
he sprints for them.
Okay.
And we worked on place and everything like that. But are there any other recommendations you can make to lower the barking and the sprint towards the person coming in the door?
I'm going to see if Dr. Davis wants to start this off or I can. Go ahead.
Yeah. What was the first thing that you said that you were doing for him?
Establishing place.
Like sitting.
So when someone comes in, I make him lay down in his bed.
Okay.
And then he can't go until I release him.
Okay. It sounds like it could be a positive experience, but yeah, with the anxiety there, is he already sitting before somebody comes to knock at the door?
He could be totally asleep, okay. And if someone knocks at the door, uh-huh. he'll go just sprinting, like doing burnouts on the floor.
Okay. And is there usually positive enforcements, and is it a clear command when you're asking him, or is he more, I guess I don't want him to be afraid of what you're asking him to do. Like he's going to be punished or anything like that.
No punishment.
Okay. So usually, I mean, I think that's a great way to start with the sitting. It's one command. It's not repetition. We're just asking them to do it once. We want them to respond to it. We don't keep bugging them about it. And then if they respond to you in a positive manner is when they get a positive treat for that. Is that kind of sound like what you're doing right now?
Yes. Okay. It's been a work in process for about 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, I'll call in and ask you.
Well, no, that's a great opinion. It's a great question. I mean, it's a great question, Garrett, because a lot of people have that problem at the door. Don't come to my house because it's crazy when you come to the door. I'm just going to reaffirm what Dr. Davis said is, a clear command. You don't want to be repeating yourself over and over again because that makes your command less meaningful. So I know Jack's well trained, so it sounds like you probably tell him to go to his place. He does. He lays down. And then the person comes in, you release him, and everything's fine. Is that correct? But what you were looking for is how to just have him not respond to someone knocking on the door in general. Is that kind of?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one because you can only control what you can control while you're present. So you can probably desensitize Jack to the knock on the door with some training and having somebody outside knocking on the door and working from the inside with him and sort of setting up a scenario to desensitize him to that, which we could get into further, but that would be how you would desensitize him to just the knock and the stimulation of someone being at the door. The problem with that whole thing, which it's definitely doable, is that you can't control it when you're not there. So he may be not performing the appropriate behavior even after you've taught him when you're not there, and that can kind of send him a little bit of a mixed message. Overall, though, what I think I would recommend is some practice with setting up mock scenarios and working on desensitizing him to the knock on the door by probably being prepared for it, asking him to sit prior to it happening, possibly giving him a treat while he's in his sit position as it's happening, and changing his mentality about what it means to have someone knock on the door. Make sense?
Yes.
That's
so as far as like giving him a treat from me, like what you just suggested, would you also recommend, like, if I have, in the mock scenarios, have the person coming in the door with treats to give him?
I think that's great, but that will probably make the knock on the door and the entering into the door more exciting. Mm-hmm. And kind of what you want to do is make it more benign and less of a big deal.
Is he's not aggressive when the people come in the door. He's very excited, correct?
Yes, unless the person tenses up.
Okay.
Then it changes his demeanor.
Okay.
It's never been an issue.
Right.
But it definitely changes his demeanor.
Okay.
And that's the main reason for wanting to prevent this is because
you don't want
an 80-pound dog running and barking.
Yeah, you don't want that getting worse, definitely. Yeah. I kind of agree with Beth. I wouldn't make too much of a spectacle about the person coming in the door. It shouldn't matter who's coming in the door.
Okay.
You know, his trigger sounds like it's the door being knocked is what his trigger is. Not necessarily.
Or it's when the door opens.
When the door opens.
Like, my roommate could leave the house.
Okay.
And he jumps up and starts running towards the door.
Okay. So, yeah, I would do the mock situations where he's just focusing on you or some sort of toy or some sort of other activity that he enjoys at home and not the person walking through the door, not the person leaving through the door. So having those mock situations where someone's knocking, leaving or entering, the goal is to have him not pay attention to that person or that action.
Right. So you, you just make it a completely benign experience and it has no meaning because everything else that you're doing while that's happening is way more exciting. That's kind of the idea behind it.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Garrett.
All right, well, have a good day.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Bye.
And this is Ask the Vet here at Katie and Kay. I'm talking with Dr. Davis, and I think we are wrapping it up today. But Dr. Davis, any take-home points for people on the prevention aspect? And maybe the other thing I wanted to touch on, actually, is trainers. A lot of people, we have a caller. Yay! Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Ajit. I'm calling. I find this very fascinating compared to my culture, how people in America treat dogs. Yeah. They are conscious beings, sentient beings. But really, they are animals, and they need to be beaten.
Yes. Well, that's a very interesting theory.
Yes. People are too politically correct. They've become soft with Obama, and I think we are going to have a change now, and things we put back in perspective starting tomorrow.
Well, that is your opinion, sir. Thank you for calling.
When that dog barks, when they come in the door, people should go to the dog and immediately kick it and scream and yell at it and put it in its place. The dog is running the house. The house must run the dog.
It's a very interesting theory. Have a great day, sir. Thank you so much. Okay, so when it comes to finding a trainer, do you think, how should people go about doing that? I know people look for trainers a lot, and I mean, there's a lot of different types of trainers out there, and we're going to wrap this up in a second, but what's your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, consulting your veterinarian.
Perfect.
I think it's a great idea. Just making sure that, you know, we're not seeing any cues that would require any kind of medical intervention, and then we can kind of set you up with a good trainer that can help your dog with positive reinforcement, trying to kind of stay away from a negative reinforcement, any kind of reprimanding, that kind of stuff. But yeah, we can definitely find a trainer for you, help you seek somebody that would fit, a really good fit between your personality and your dog as well.
Awesome. Great. Thank you so much. We appreciate all the listeners, and thanks for listening to Ask the Vet.